Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight is an unusually gratifying occasion for me. Throughout our city, there are gatherings of friends and neighbors who have signed a card pledging support of my candidacy for the office of mayor. They have organized themselves into a Humphrey for Mayor volunteer committee. They have arranged a series of radio listening parties to which they have invited their friends and neighbors. Their work has been deeply gratifying, especially in view of the evidence they have shown me of support of my candidacy from groups and individuals representing all sections of our city. To these friends and neighbors, and to all of you who are listening, I can only say that I wish it were possible for me to be in your home this evening. I wish that I could sit down and talk personally with you concerning this campaign and the election. But as you know, Minneapolis is a large city. It is not physically possible for me to sit down and meet and talk with each and every one of you. So tonight, I come to you by the means of radio to tell you about the campaign, to discuss your place in it, and to talk about your responsibility for civic leadership. I know you are anxious to become active and that you want to participate in this effort to revitalize our institutions of local government. You know that these are not ordinary times. These are days of great decision. The armed forces of the United Nations are marching on to inevitable victory. The military and the political unity, which has been the substance of the United Nations, will soon become permanent as a result of the great conference at San Francisco. An election in the midst of these tremendous and dramatic developments imposes great responsibilities upon all of us. We all realize that our first task is the winning of this war and the securing of a just and durable peace. It is sometimes not easy to understand the relationship between the problems right here in Minneapolis and the great and dramatic events which are taking place on the fields of battle or in the conferences of the diplomats. There is, however, a direct relationship. There is a definite need that we understand that each and every one of us has a part, and that what each of us does affects the ultimate outcome. We need only reflect for a moment to see the importance of our every act. We are a city of 500,000 people strategically located in the great Middle West. We are the heart of a great agricultural area. We are a vital war production center. We must and we will man our factories. We must and we will produce an ever-increasing flow of munitions and war materials. We must, and I say that we will, maintain industrial peace. We must and we will meet every demand and every sacrifice required of us. In all of these respects, we can be proud of the record of the people of our city. We can be proud of the fact that not a single strike has taken place in our factories during wartime. Minneapolis industrial management and Minneapolis organized labor have been faithful and truly patriotic. We are proud of the activities of our local Red Cross, the work of our blood donor center, and of our schools and the churches, and the contributions of our numerous social and community agencies. Yes, our city is a powerful factor in the winning of this war, and a powerful factor in the winning of this peace. The part we as citizens of a large metropolitan city play in the war effort and in the movement leading to permanent peace makes it imperative that the mayor of this city be a leader of public opinion. But unfortunately, the mayor of this city has failed in this obligation. He has failed to provide effective leadership in bringing to the attention of our people the importance of the great proposals as laid down at Bretton Woods and Dumbarton Oaks and the other historic international meetings. By his failure to act in these matters, the mayor has demonstrated that he does not understand the interrelationship between world peace and economic security. Yes, between world security and Minneapolis prosperity. I wish tonight to call upon the present mayor of Minneapolis to set aside the week of April 23rd through April 29th as United Nations Week. I wish to urge that the mayor call together all groups that are interested in establishment of a permanent United Nations organization to outline a coordinated program of education and information in support of the United Nations Conference at San Francisco. Now, let there be no mistake about it. Upon the success or the failure of the San Francisco Conference will depend whether future generations shall live in peace or face the resurgence of war. In America today, as in no other country, the success of government must rest upon the capacity of the individual citizen to understand or manage his own political affairs. We right here on the home front have a duty as great as that of our fighting men. That duty is one of steeping ourselves in the democratic faith, of knowing not only what we are fighting against, but of truly understanding what we are fighting for. That duty involves making democracy real at home. It means that our faith in democracy must be given concrete expression in our political, social, and economic institutions. It means the participation of every adult citizen in the determination of our political life. Democracy can be meaningful only if government is responsive to the needs and the desires of the great mass of people. A democratic government cannot afford to have great sections of its population in poverty, unemployment, and living in slums and insecurity. A democratic government cannot afford exploitation of man by man. A world constructed on democratic principles must be a world that practices the brotherhood of all men on a local level and on a national and international basis. It is against this backdrop of momentous national and international events that we are now engaged in a municipal election campaign. These events impose upon us the responsibility of conducting a campaign that deals with these issues of vital and lasting importance. Now, too often have whispers and slanders and personal insults overshadowed the real issue. I want you to know that I am not willing to be a party to a campaign of slander. I am not interested in attacking the character or the personality of those who are my opponents in this election. I ask you as my friend, and now I speak especially to those of you who have pledged your support to me, to conduct yourself on a high level of intellectual honesty and decency. I want this campaign to be informative and educational, not merely political. I want this campaign to be an educational forum directed at the objective of promoting an intelligent understanding of the problems of our city and the real issues of our time. I propose to present a program of action looking to the future.
The following time has been purchased by the United War Veterans of America in order to present an address by Mr. Ray Lund, Deputy Chief of Staff, who will discuss the candidacy of Herbert H. Humphrey for mayor. Mr. Lund is an overseas veteran of World War II. He was a machine gunner and was wounded in the Battle of Guadalcanal, and he wears the Purple Heart. Now, Mr. Lund.
Citizens of Minneapolis, it is my pleasure as the Deputy Chief of Staff of the United Veterans of America to speak to you in behalf of the candidacy of Hubert H. Humphrey for mayor. Briefly, the United Veterans of America is an organization whose membership is predominantly composed of World War II veterans, soldiers, sailors, and Marines in the armed conflict beyond the seas. This organization staunchly stands for freedom from fear, freedom from want, and above all, freedom for equal opportunities for all. Hubert H. Humphrey, your candidate for mayor, and our candidate for mayor, is supported by the United Veterans of America for the reason that he is sincerely concerned with the problems confronting the returned serviceman. And I assure you that the problems confronting my comrades to readjust themselves to civilian life are difficult and grave. We have checked the selective service record of Hubert H. Humphrey, and we who are veterans of World War II know he has a clean record, a record free of any doubt, As veterans, we highly resent the rumors and vicious slander which certain candidates and their cohorts have spread concerning Hubert Humphrey. He has fulfilled every requirement of selective service. When you hear any rumor about this matter, call the Minneapolis Draft Board and get the truth. Don't believe vicious and slanderous falsehoods. Hubert H. Humphrey regards it to be the duty of a mayor to take an active and practical interest in the readjustment of veterans to community life. He believes it is the responsibility of the mayor to take leadership in the matter of providing reemployment, hospitalization, housing, and educational opportunities for veterans. The United Veterans of America have carefully discussed with Mr. Humphrey his views, and having carefully considered his views, the United Veterans of America are satisfied that he will do everything possible to create, establish, and strengthen proper agencies concerned with veterans affairs. His wide experience in the field of community organization and his careful attention to and intimate knowledge of national and local affairs properly qualifies him to approach, understand, and act upon the problems confronting the veteran. The United Veterans of America and all veterans have been assured and are confident that they will be properly considered and represented in the councils of his administration. He has made clear and positively states that the Civil Service Commission in this city, a commission which establishes the employment policies for all municipal agencies, must take cognizance of the special employment problem of handicapped veterans. We know that the veteran will be given the benefit of every protection and every right which is due him under the administration of Hubert Humphrey. We who are veterans of this war have carefully analyzed the qualifications of each and every candidate for the office of mayor. We have looked into their background, their training, their experience, and their program, and we are convinced that it does not satisfactorily appear that the other candidates are properly qualified to administer the public affairs of 500,000 individuals. And we further feel that a city of 500,000 workers and soldiers should have a mayor who is not only qualified for the job, but also has had practical experience in governmental administration. We recognize that veterans' affairs must be handled in a cooperative relationship between federal, state, and local governments. And we are anxious to have a mayor for this city who will confer with the officials in Washington and who will speak for the veteran at the nation's capital. This means something to the veteran. Our problem will require federal assistance. That assistance can be obtained through a person who has the confidence and trust of national leaders. And Hubert H. Humphrey has the confidence and trust of national leaders. The qualifications of Mr. Humphrey are outstanding. He has had an extensive training in the field of public administration. He entered into the federal government administrative service in the fall of 1940 and proved himself to be an efficient and capable administrator. He received successive promotions through a period of 3 years. He served as state director of the Minnesota Community Service Programs under the jurisdiction of the Federal Works Agency. With the advent of the war, he was given additional responsibilities and promoted to the position of state chief of Minnesota War Service Programs. In this position, he had the responsibility for federal government assistance to such war agencies as the Civilian Defense Organization, Army-Navy Establishment, War Research Project, and Wartime Recreational and Educational Programs. Later on, he was appointed as Director of War Production Training and Reemployment. Through the program directed by his office, thousands of workers were trained and placed in war industries. It should be known and remembered that this position necessitated a close working relationship with the industrial management, trade unions, vocational training authorities, and so on. Having completed this work, he was appointed as Assistant Director of the Twin City Area for the War Manpower Commission. Here again, he was in constant touch with the management and labor in the Twin City area. He was instrumental in stabilizing industrial relations in order that war quotas could be made. He was an important factor in securing the necessary workers to man our war factories. We veterans regard this record as an important contribution to the war effort. We who were in the foxholes and I was in a foxhole for many weeks, day in and day out, night after night, well realized that without production on the home front, there could be no victory on the battlefront. The men and women in the armed services fully recognize the importance of home front unity. Let me assure you, citizens and voters, that the men and women of the armed forces are not so gullible as to believe that this war could be won solely by the military personnel. Despite the fact that certain newspapers and so-called veteran spokesmen presently seek to create suspicion and sow seeds of disunity between the soldiers on the battlefront and the workers on the home front. During 1943 and 1944, Mr. Humphrey served as professor of political science at McAllister College. A major part of his duties was the instruction of Army Air Corps cadets, United States Army Air Corps Cadets 347th Training Detachment. We believe that to be a contribution to victory. We assure you that there is no such thing as a free country where continuous education has been destroyed. And Hubert H. Humphrey, the educator, as mayor, will constantly strive to achieve unity between business, labor, soldiers, and workers. Along with his official duties as federal government administrator and later on as a teacher, Mr. Humphrey was active in many community organizations. He is a member of the Minnesota United Nations Advisory Committee. He has been one of their chief speakers throughout the state. Working tirelessly in behalf of a permanent organization of the United Nations, we believe this to be a contribution to victory. This war is not being fought merely to prove our military supremacy over our enemies. This war is being fought so that we may have a permanent peace. It is the demand of every veteran that some form of international organization be created to guarantee to future generations that the threat of war will never come again. The problems facing the veterans are in the main similar to those that face every member of this community. We are anxious to live a normal community life. We want a home. We want a family. We want to be able to rear this family in a wholesome and healthful environment. We want the benefits that come from law enforcement, from progressive education, and from modern libraries and recreational facilities. We want to be citizens in a democratic country. We know that all the things we want and need will not come about if government is permitted to drift aimlessly and if a city such as ours is without positive leadership. We have come face to face with the housing problems of Minnesota. Only the other night our woes were given special attention by a prominent newspaper columnist. Let me quote him. Housing shortages are nothing new in anybody's town. But the seriousness of the Minneapolis situation took on an added significance at the War Housing Center. Two veterans were back from overseas. Big, strapping fellows they were. One of them had faced artillery fire and plenty of it in Germany. The other had fought the Nips in four major Pacific invasions. They were both fathers, returned with medical discharges. Their wives had been very careful about giving them complete details of the circumstances under which they had been housed during their husband's absence. The veterans were appalled. They began immediately the long, the tedious, the fruitless search for a home. Both of them wound up the War Housing Center. Desperate, desolate, bitter, very bitter. And what do you think those two veterans did? They sat there at the housing office and wept. Before too many of our boys get back to face the same situation, somebody had better do something about present conditions. End of quotation. We have noticed that the present mayor of the city has been silent about housing matters. We are aware of the fact that he did nothing during the period of the state legislative session to encourage the enactment of a law which would make it possible to have federal assistance for our housing. We are unable to find any evidence of his leadership in encouraging a constructive program for cleaning up our blighted areas and our rundown sections of the city. On the other hand, we know, and we are sure you know, that Hubert Humphrey has made his position clear and definite. He appeared before the legislature, the city council, and in the nation's capital as to the necessity for a broad program of housing along with public and private construction. He has brought to the public's attention again and again that unless industrial development takes place in Minneapolis, and unless we have a greatly expanded employment program following this war, we are going to be confronted with a serious and critical unemployment situation. We know that Minneapolis had over 35,000 people unemployed in 1940, the year before we entered this war. We also know that from 20,000 to 25,000 additional workers have been added to our labor force. If we go back to the levels of 1940, every veteran knows that this city will be in a desperate situation. Jobs will not be available, and all that we fought for in terms of security will have been lost. The only answer to jobs for veterans rests in greatly expanded business activity and, in some measure, the construction of needed public buildings and public improvements. We feel, of all the candidates running for the office of mayor, Hubert Humphrey offers the best program and the most likely chance of being able to carry it through. And in conclusion, the United Veterans of America assure you voters that Hubert H. Humphrey is the choice of businessmen, workers, and soldiers for mayor. Workers, soldiers, veterans, citizens, unite for Hubert H. Humphrey for mayor of Minneapolis. I thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. At the outset of my broadcast tonight, I wish to acknowledge the many hundreds of letters and messages that I have been receiving from the many voters who wish to express their support of the program that I have been presenting. These messages are deeply gratifying. They demonstrate a genuine interest in the real problems that confront our community. They are a convincing proof that the thoughtful people of Minneapolis favor a positive program aimed at revitalizing our city government. Your letters intensify my determination to do everything in my power as mayor to make certain that our city shall begin on the long road back to civic progress. I feel that your messages have caught the full spirit of a campaign that we have attempted to keep educational and informative, a campaign that provides a high level of discussion of the truly important issues of the day. In the course of this campaign, I have been attempting to present to you a program of action, a program based upon the need of vigorous, yet sound and constructive leadership. I have pointed out that the mayor of this city can do much to restore sound government, that he can and should be a community leader, not a follower. I have stressed the importance of leadership in time of war, a time when every effort must be used for the full mobilization of our resources for the war effort. I have pointed out that Minneapolis is suffering from a do-nothing policy in the mayor's office. I have pointed out that effective leadership has been lacking in the designing of programs that would combat juvenile delinquency, revitalize our government, restore our city to financial solvency, plan for post-war business expansion, ensure harmonious labor-management relations, and plan for needed community redevelopment. The evidence is overwhelming that the present mayor has failed to use the authority and influence of his office to launch the needed programs for community redevelopment and civic betterment. The true record, the official record, proves that the present mayor, in spite of promises and declarations, in spite of proclamations and publicity, has followed a do-nothing policy, a policy of straddling the fence and evading responsibility. The mayor of Minneapolis, under provisions of the present charter, can be a leader. He can be vigorous in his exercise of the authority of his office. He can coordinate and integrate the machinery of government. As a member of nearly all of the city's numerous boards and commissions, he can coordinate the many governmental activities and represent the interests of the entire city. Just as the president gives to Congress and the people a report on the state of our nation, so our mayor should bring before the city council and the people of Minneapolis periodic reports on the activities of our various governmental agencies. In other words, it all depends on whether the mayor chooses to exert the influence and prestige of his office, whether he takes the course of least resistance, and whether he is willing and able to work for, plan for, and fight for a greater Minneapolis. Recently, you may have received a campaign paper which is described as a summary of the administration of the present mayor, and may I say in passing, an out-and-out mudslinging attack upon my candidacy. This paper is known as, and I quote, the record. Well, let's look at the record. But let's look at the true record, the official record. One of the best indications of how energetically the mayor has interested himself in matters of civic importance is his attendance and conduct as a member of the several important agencies of our city government. The agencies of which he is a member perform vital functions for the community. They establish tax rates, provide library services, determine public welfare policies, study and approve city planning and zoning, and determine the overall park and recreational programs. It would seem that leadership, with respect to these functions, would require at the very minimum the mayor's attendance. Yet an examination of the minutes of the meetings of the boards and commissions reveals the striking fact that the mayor has been repeatedly absent, not just occasionally absent, but constantly so. Now let us look at the true record, and again I say the official record. The Board of Estimate and Taxation is an extremely important governmental agency, especially in view of the difficult financial condition of our city. This board is held from July 1st, 1941, to January 1st, 1945, the period of the present mayor's occupancy of the mayor's office, a total of 168 sessions. The mayor has been absent from 71 of these sessions, or almost 50% of the time. The Board of Estimate and Taxation is concerned with the vital problem of raising city money, reviewing the city budget, and determining the city's tax rate. Yet the mayor has regarded its function so lightly that he has failed to attend almost half of its sessions. Is it any wonder that our city faces a critical tax and revenue problem? Being on the job but 50% of the time can at its best produce but half-hearted measures. And halfway and half-hearted measures cannot provide a solution to our tax and revenue problem. Another important agency of which the mayor is a member is the Park Board. The Park Board has had, since the present mayor assumed office, a total of 97 scheduled meetings, from which the mayor has been absent 55 times. This means that the present mayor has failed in his duties with respect to the Park Board 60% of the time. Of even greater importance to the future of Minneapolis is the City Planning Commission. This body has had a total of 100 scheduled meetings from July 1, 1941 to January 1, 1945. Of these 100 meetings, the present mayor has been absent 70 times, which is almost three-fourths of the time. Moreover, other members of the commission tell me that he frequently attends only long enough to be present for roll call. Again, the mayor regarded his work lightly, despite the fact that the planning commission is concerned with our most vital problem, the problem of planning for the Minneapolis of tomorrow. Informed citizens know that the Minneapolis Park Board and the planning commission played an important part in the establishment of the very important Metropolitan Airport Terminal. Yet the mayor of this city was absent from the meetings of the Park Board and the Planning Commission almost three-fourths of the time. Now let me be more specific. On January 16, 1943, the mayor of St. Paul called the first meeting to discuss airport legislation. The mayor of St. Paul had time to be present, but the mayor of Minneapolis just wasn't there. On February 6, 1943, former Governor Harold Stassen took a hand in the airport question. Governor Stassen held a conference in the state capitol, inviting representatives of the Twin Cities to discuss with him and the legislators numerous bills pertaining to the all-important airport project. Again, the mayor of St. Paul had time to be there, but the mayor of Minneapolis was absent. On March 26, 1943, the State Senate Aviation Committee held hearings on proposed legislation to establish the Twin Cities Airport Commission. Again, the mayor of Minneapolis was too busy, as he put it, to be present. Now, is this what our present mayor calls leadership? Is this what is meant when his campaign literature states that he was instrumental in setting up the Minneapolis-St. Paul Metropolitan Airport Commission? Let us examine the matter of the City Planning Commission just a little bit more closely. Let us take a look at the true record, the official record. Not only was the mayor absent from the Planning Commission meetings almost three-fourths of the time, but failed to follow the recommendations of that commission. On February 17, 1943, our City Planning Commission, of which the present mayor is a member, proposed that an organization, to be called the Post-War Development Council, be formed. Such a council would include representatives of civic organizations, technical experts, representatives of labor, business, and social agencies. The Planning Commission incorporated this proposal in the Commission's report. It was a definite responsibility of the mayor to follow through on this recommendation. Yet to this date, nothing has been done. No post-war development council has been formed, and all proposals to establish a Greater Minneapolis Association or a post-war development council have been ignored. I have called upon the present mayor to establish a Greater Minneapolis Association to represent the various interests in our city. I have called upon the mayor to obtain from the city council additional funds for our planning commission so that its research and technical facilities could be implemented. But as with so many other things, nothing has been done. Excellent proposals have been filed away. Precious time has been lost. The mayor has done nothing to set in motion a community organization to guarantee a greater future for Minneapolis. Under terms of our city charter, the mayor is a member of the library board. Minneapolis is facing a critical situation with respect to the maintenance of its library facilities. It has been necessary to curtail services because of inadequate funds. And in this election, a proposal has been placed before the people to secure additional tax revenue in order to support our library. The library, like the school, is the very heart and core of a cultured community. From July 1st, 1941 to January 1st, 1945, the present mayor has been present at library meetings only 8 times out of a total of 60 sessions. In other words, the present mayor has shown almost no interest in your library or in its services. Again, let us look at the true record. The present mayor claims that he laid plans for a realistic approach for adequate housing. If ever the present mayor failed to provide leadership, truly it was with respect to the matter of housing. Our city is faced with a critical housing shortage that runs into thousands of units. The wives and families of servicemen are living in facilities unfit for human habitation, and recent reports reveal that more than 700 servicemen's wives will be evicted from their present homes because they are being sold to other persons. Months ago, the present mayor should have come forth with a program of action that would assist the wives and families of servicemen in finding suitable living quarters. He should have cooperated with the city council in their efforts to place housing legislation before the state legislature. Instead, the mayor has just drifted along. He has presented no program. He did not appear before the recent session of the state legislature. He has shown no active interest in either public or in private housing. He has given no leadership or program to meet our critical situation. He is without a program. He is without a policy. He is without even a plan. This, then, is the true record. The true record of the present mayor. Can anyone doubt that Minneapolis city government is in need of revitalization? Can anyone doubt that there is a need for new ideas and new leadership in the mayor's office? As I have said so many times, and I wish to emphasize again, the mayor's office is not without authority and influence. The mayor of Minneapolis can have real influence in creating a greater Minneapolis. We can have community redevelopment. We can have an adequate housing program. We can have business expansion. We can have adequate law enforcement. We can have sound programs of economic and social betterment. But we can't have these things if the mayor of this city is a do-nothing mayor. We cannot have these things unless the citizens of Minneapolis are willing to fight the corrosion of indifference that has so long characterized the mayor's office. It is time for the citizens of Minneapolis to restore the government to the people. It is time for the citizens of Minneapolis to set their house in order and to move forward to a greater Minneapolis. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. In my campaign for the office of mayor, I have been attempting to deal with the issues that I believe are of fundamental importance to the civic betterment of our community. I have set forth a program of post-war industrial expansion that will prepare us for the difficult period of reconversion that will follow the war. I have discussed in some detail the need for an intelligent plan of fiscal reform that will restore our city to financial solvency. I have dealt at length with the extremely difficult problem of housing, and I have projected an overall program for community redevelopment. These matters, I believe, are of fundamental importance, because upon the successful handling of them will depend whether or not our city will be able to provide ample job and business opportunities for our returning servicemen and for all of our people. The people of Minneapolis, I believe, have welcomed with great enthusiasm this type of campaign. The people want their political leaders to be responsible and constructive in their public statements. Minneapolis elections in recent years have centered almost exclusively around one problem, and this is an extremely important problem, the problem of law enforcement. In the flood of charges and countercharges, a typical mayoralty campaign finds the other issues completely ignored. Now, this type of campaign has never served the best interest of the community, and to engage in such a campaign today would result in positive harm to our city. Our city of Minneapolis stands on the threshold of a new period in its life. The war has brought many changes in our economic life. Already thousands of servicemen have returned to our community, and future months will find many more thousands on their way home. War workers will soon be looking for new jobs in peacetime industries. We will face a tremendous task of readjustment and reconstruction. It will be imperative that our city afford job opportunities to those who seek gainful employment. We must have new industries. We must expand existing retail, wholesale, and industrial establishments. In short, there must be profit for business and jobs for labor. I am pledged to this program. No amount of scare campaign on the part of the opposition, no amount of ridiculous charges and deliberate falsehood can alter the fact that I have presented a program of industrial expansion and a constructive approach to labor and industrial relations, which will do much to make possible a growing and a prosperous Minneapolis. This raises the fundamental question, what type of a city do we want our fighting men and women to return to? Since the very beginning of this campaign, I have made it clear that I wanted the issue of law enforcement to have its proper place within a total program of civic betterment. And I have repeatedly stated, in no uncertain terms, that when I am elected mayor, I will enforce the law. I will enforce the law impartially and without fear or favor to any group or any combination of interests. I contend that the present laws relating to gambling and sale of liquor are liberal. The present laws afford ample opportunity for profit in business and respectability in the community. If there are those in this community that feel these laws are too liberal or that feel that these laws are too strict, the answer to their problem lies in the state legislature. The mayor of this city is obligated under the terms of our charter to enforce the law. He has no authority to alter or to make new laws. Adequate and proper law enforcement is an integral part of my overall community program. There must be an end to laxity in law enforcement. There must be an end to special privilege for special interests. There must be an end to the mysterious and insidious influence that seems to have the key to the mayor's office. There must be an end to an invisible government, a mysterious and secret force responsible to no one, which seems to have control in this city. I see little need to engage in a lengthy and detailed statement of charges to prove that organized rackets have existed and continue to exist in our city. I believe that every informed person in my listening audience has seen sufficient evidence in our daily newspapers to convince him that such is the case. Is there anyone who believes that there has not been, during the last 4 years, open violations on an extensive scale of our gambling, liquor, and white slavery laws? Is there anyone who believes that there is not something basically wrong with our city government in this matter of law enforcement? I would like to quote just briefly an editorial from the Minneapolis Star-Journal under the date of January 1945. The fact is that Minneapolis is and has been for years an open town. Not a wide open town, but one in which racketeers and criminal rings have been able to operate without much molestation as long as they kept within certain bounds which have not been the bounds of law, but the bounds of public and official tolerance. End of quote. I should like, too, to remind you of the report of the October-November 1944 Hennepin Grand Jury. In that report, the grand jury said that there was open flaunting of the laws on gambling and liquor sales, and that this condition revealed one of three things. First, that the police are stupid or inefficient. Second, that somebody is getting paid off. Third, that our police are told to lay off on orders from the higher-ups. Now, the first of these, that the police are stupid or inefficient, just is not true. This is not the cause of the open violations. The rank-and-file police officer of Minneapolis is an honest, conscientious, hard-working citizen who wants to maintain his self-respect and to do a good job. That there were open violations, the grand jury clearly demonstrated, and the possible explanations advanced by the jury certainly is convincing evidence that something is fundamentally wrong with the administration of our mayor's office. Because it is in the mayor's office that responsibility for law enforcement rests, and to blame the police department is to blame a department that operates on its orders from the mayor's office. I fully recognize the pressures and the trials and difficulties encountered by the mayor of this city in the matter of law enforcement. I do not wish to be unfair in my criticism. I know all too well that the responsibility for law enforcement is a serious one. No mayor or police force can make this city pure and without law violation. There will always be a few to violate the laws, but it is the organized, the commercial, and the professional rackets which must be squelched. Just within recent weeks, our federal government found it necessary to send the FBI into Minneapolis for the purpose of cleaning up white slavery conditions, which had flourished to the point where Minneapolis had become the recruitment center for the entire nation. When federal judge Gunnar H. Nordby sentenced the men convicted as a result of the FBI white slavery investigation, he said, and I quote the federal judge, "Conditions such as these, which have been brought to light in this case, are nauseating and certainly a blight in our community. From testimony in these cases, it is apparent that the so-called North Minneapolis night spots served as a rendezvous for procurers and panderers plying their nefarious trade and procuring young local girls to work for them in this city and elsewhere. There can hardly be any criminal activity more despicable than to arrange for the transportation of women in interstate commerce for the purpose of prostitution." End of quote. These conditions are not of recent development. They have existed for at least the past 4 years. It is ridiculous for the mayor and his enforcement officers to say that they did not know that such conditions exist. The responsibility for these conditions is squarely up to the mayor, as the grand jury has pointed out. Ladies and gentlemen, let there be no mistake about one thing. If you elect me mayor, I accept the responsibility for law enforcement, and I will enforce the law. I am convinced that the police force will and wants to enforce the law. I know that the public desires that the laws be enforced. And I give you my solemn pledge. And let this be a warning to those who now degrade our government and our city by making unholy alliances that permit illicit operations. I give you my solemn pledge that the laws will be enforced. But law enforcement is not merely a matter of police administration. A peaceful, harmonious, and law-abiding community comes only when people live in conditions which are conducive to normal and healthy community relationships. There is a direct relationship between full employment at decent wages and respect for law. There is a direct relationship between good housing, modern parks and playgrounds, progressive schools, adequate library facilities, and respect for the laws and ordinances of this community. It has been with this thought in mind that I have placed before you a constructive program which includes the expansion and development of our libraries, parks, and playgrounds, a program which includes new and better housing for Minneapolis, a program which demands industrial expansion. All of these things mean a better Minneapolis. If we remove the social and economic causes of crime, and if we fortify our positive efforts with an extensive program of crime prevention and control, the problem of law enforcement, as we now know it, will be minimized. We must think in terms of the old adage that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. When we see evidences of flagrant violation of the law, positive action must be taken. But no amount of police protection, no amount of law enforcement alone, can cope with the increase of crime which comes from environmental and social conditions that breed delinquency and criminal behavior. We must direct our thinking in terms of building finer and better citizens. We must become positive and constructive in our approach. We must attack the source of delinquency and crime and not merely wait to take action when the criminal is on the loose. During the war years, juvenile delinquency has been on the increase. And unless adequate precautions are taken, we can expect a recurrence of what happened after the last war. Tonight's Minneapolis Star-Journal gives us adequate evidence of what results from tolerating conditions which produce delinquency and criminal behavior. Let me quote to you from the news article. Petty crime operations of almost fantastic proportions were under investigation today by the Juvenile Division Police, who laid 200 to 300 theft and other cases to a dozen Northside boys, 14 to 18 years of age. Detectives said it was the most gigantic tangle of crime they have been asked to tackle in the history of the department. End of quote. Such outstanding cases of juvenile delinquency surely must bring to our mind the appalling conditions of blighted and slum areas which exist in certain sections of our city. To merely place in custody those who are guilty of the crimes committed is not an answer to the problem. It is imperative that slum and blighted areas be cleaned up and that crime prevention programs on an extensive scale be instituted at once. After the last war, under the impact of social changes created by the war, the rate of delinquency skyrocketed. We must act now to prevent this from happening again. Juvenile delinquency and inadequate law enforcement go hand in hand. Thus, a positive program aimed at cleaning up Minneapolis must deal realistically with the problem. And dealing realistically means mobilizing the public in support of a courageous program that, without fear or favor, enforces the existing laws. I wish to outline a 7-point program that I believe will provide a realistic attack upon the problem of juvenile delinquency. First, we should strengthen our police facilities by increasing the amount of specialized training of officers dealing with juvenile problems. Second, we should reinforce existing social agencies and expand social welfare activities and services for young people. Third, we should open our school facilities to the greatest possible extent for supervised recreation and after-school hours. Fourth, we should provide adequate supervision for playgrounds, boys' clubs, and settlement houses. Fifth, we should establish supervised facilities particularly for younger children of parents engaged in war work. Sixth, we should encourage more church groups to open their recreational facilities to young people. And seventh, we should coordinate the various social agencies that are in existence in order to determine areas of danger. This program of crime prevention is essential to the success of overall planning for civic betterment. The control of juvenile delinquency and the adequate enforcement of laws are musts on our program for building of a greater Minneapolis. The good people of Minneapolis want law enforcement, just as they want good housing, industrial expansion, efficient administration, and community redevelopment. Government responsible to the people, government cooperating with the people, can do these things. But the people must be militant in their support of a candidate who has a sound program and who will fight for what he knows to be right.
My pleasure to present to you, to this honorable body, and to you, ladies and gentlemen, his honor, the newly elected mayor of the city of Minneapolis, Jules Humphrey.
Mr. Hoyer, honorable members of the City Council, the privilege of appearing before you today is a sobering and challenging one. As your newly elected chief executive, I am acutely conscious of the tremendous responsibility that will rest upon me during the next 2 years. It is a responsibility that I share with you as members of the City Council and with members of the other boards and commissions to make certain that our city government shall successfully manage its affairs during one of the most critical periods in our history. In the period that lies ahead, it shall be our task to ensure continued production in our war factories, and after victory, to assist in the reconversion of our war industries to a peacetime basis. It shall be our task to help relocate thousands of war workers in peacetime industries. It shall be our task to help ensure harmonious labor management relations that will guarantee a setting of industrial peace for the achievement of continued prosperity. It shall be our task to make certain that as the servicemen return to this community, they will be given every opportunity to resume their normal lives as civilians. It shall be our task to guard against the breakdown in human relations in our community, such as occurred in many localities after the last war. And it shall be our task to administer the governmental functions entrusted to us in the most economical, the most efficient, and the most beneficial manner possible. We meet today to begin the formulating of plans and policies which will deal with the many problems that now beset our community and others that we can expect to emerge as the change from war to peace increases in tempo. At the very outset of our relations as mayor and council, I wish to state that I come before you with a respectful and sincere desire to cooperate with your honorable body. We will not measure up to these tasks unless we have teamwork and sincerity of purpose on all sides. I am aware of both the powers and the limitations of my office as set forth in the charter of our city, and I offer you the fullest assurance that I shall at all times respect my constitutional position and avoid any encroachment upon your prerogative. In return, I ask your cooperation and assistance in making possible the realization of the type of administration that will best serve our community. I speak frankly on this matter because it is of utmost importance to the future economic and social welfare of our city that there be harmonious working relationships between the various branches and departments of our government. During the war, we have experienced a high level of employment, a sharp reduction in our relief costs, an expanded industrial production, increased revenues for our city, and generally improved economic conditions. But wartime prosperity has not brought financial solvency to Minneapolis, nor has it provided us with a guarantee of full employment in the post-war. We must not delude ourselves by thinking that we have fundamentally solved our community problems during the war period. Indeed, the war has, rather than solved any problems, accentuated the responsibilities of government and our challenge to solve our civic problems. The war has demonstrated the continuing need for united community action on a broad front. It has brought into sharp focus many issues such as housing, law enforcement, and the adequacy of our welfare and recreational facilities. It has demonstrated the imperative need for expanded industrial production if we are to have a high level of employment. It has demonstrated that the strength of a community lies not only in its material resources, but also in the health, the welfare, the education, and the patriotic devotion of its citizens. The war has demonstrated, finally, the need for an active and enlightened program involving the cooperative efforts of all sections of this community. In this manner, we can and we will build a sounder economic and social base for our life as a city. Already, there is a public awareness of the need for this type of program. There is a deep concern about the future, a concern which becomes more real because of our clear recollection of the difficulties of our immediate past. We are determined that there will not be a recurrence of breadlines, of mass unemployment, of idle factories, and a closed bank. We are determined that a community in peace can be as dynamic and prosperous as a community at war. This concern about the future has resulted in the creation of a large number of public and private agencies devoted to the study of some phase of community redevelopment, or housing, or business expansion, law enforcement, and the improvement of recreational and welfare facilities, and our general problems of local government. This is encouraging to me. It signifies an awakening of civic spirit. These groups are performing the valuable service of preparing the ground upon which we can build a better city. It would be folly for us not to recognize their value. We should encourage their work and assist them in every manner beneficial to the community. However, an adequate program of post-war development for our city requires the pooling of the resources and skills of all groups, both public and private. It has required unity of effort to achieve victory in this war. It will require unity of effort to accomplish the fulfillment of our peacetime plans. Minneapolis, like many other cities, has over the years undergone many changes that have resulted in great loss in property values, the emergence of blighted areas, the development of traffic hazards, and the deterioration of many of our municipal facilities. Our blighted and substandard living areas existed long before this war. Construction during the 1930s, as you well know, was less than half of the level maintained in the preceding 10-year period. Many of our traffic routes are congested and are in need of modernization. The majority of our municipal buildings and service facilities are in need of expansion and repair. Many sections of our downtown business district, particularly in the older area, have become economic liabilities. The existence of blighted areas creates conditions which lower health and living standards, causing social losses which cannot be estimated in dollars and cents. What Minneapolis needs is an overall program of community redevelopment, an overall program of slum and blighted area clearance, the undertaking of many needed public construction projects, and the encouragement of private capital to invest in large-scale business and residential construction. We, as public officials, must do everything possible to encourage this type of urban redevelopment. We must utilize the legislation which has empowered our city government to assist private capital in wide-scale neighborhood redevelopment. This means the closest working relationship between our agencies of government and those individuals or private corporations that wish to undertake development projects. But successful community redevelopment cannot be achieved by government alone. We must, I suggest, establish a committee representing every interest in this city. This committee should coordinate its efforts with our splendid City Planning Commission and the Council's Post-War Progress Committee in formulating an overall post-war development program. Government and community, business and labor, social agencies and financial institutions must work together. A master plan must be formulated. This plan will become the blueprint for the future Minneapolis. There is every reason to believe that both the state and national governments will be willing to lend financial assistance to a well-planned program that has community support. So I recommend for your consideration the strengthening of our City Planning Commission by increased appropriation so the need for research and technical service can be adequately satisfied. Economic studies prove that the greatest single factor to guarantee increased employment and industrial activity in Minneapolis will be a large-scale construction program. Therefore, first among our post-war responsibilities is urban redevelopment in Minneapolis in its broadest sense. Now, one aspect of urban redevelopment which requires immediate and specific attention is that of housing. The immediate problem, as you know, is to provide sanitary, safe, and suitable homes for war workers and for the wives and families of servicemen. This necessitates an even more vigorous program of locating available housing space. A complete study of our zoning ordinances in terms of this emergency and finally, the securing of proper priority rating for the materials to enable the construction of units allocated by the National Housing Authority and the local Production Urgency Committee. The emergency aspects of our war housing situation, however, should not be confused with the long-range or post-war need for many new homes. The solution of the long-term housing problem necessitates, first of all, the encouragement of private capital to invest in large-scale housing projects as well as individual home construction. There must be the very widest possible application of the recently adopted Neighborhood Redevelopment Act, which authorizes the establishment of a commission with authority to assist private investors and corporations in a program of extensive housing and slum clearance. Large-scale housing construction in Minneapolis must include a combination of both private and public investment. Minneapolis has individuals in the low-income group who are unable to pay rents required to support private construction. We must have an enabling act which will permit Minneapolis to establish a municipal housing authority. If this cannot be obtained by action of the state legislature, I propose that we amend our city charter to empower the municipality with the necessary legal authority. Now, one objective of both community redevelopment and housing is the creation of new job and business opportunities. Post-war progress demands that Minneapolis industry function at full capacity. A large portion of Minneapolis wartime industrial activity is of strictly emergency nature. With the end of the war, this industrial capacity will be lost to this area unless proper steps are taken to ensure the reconversion of those facilities suitable for our peacetime production. Encouragement of reconversion of wartime facilities should be a part of a larger program to stimulate business and industrial expansion. This larger program should include a vigorous drive on the part of all branches of our city government to obtain freight rate equality for this section of the nation. Unceasing activity to expand our transportation facilities. Completion, as you have dedicated yourselves already, to the Upper Harbor projects. Promotion of closer understanding among business, labor, and agriculture, and the encouragement of research that will help local industries manufacture products which will make Minneapolis the center for processing new commodities made from locally produced materials. A special attention should be given to the encouragement of local labor management committees. The wartime pattern of harmonious industrial relations must be continued into the peacetime period. It is the responsibility of government to require of business management and of organized labor the placing of community interests above that of their particular group. Labor relations can no longer survive by the law of the jungle. We have arrived at a point in our economic life where it is of the utmost importance that those responsible for production, both on the side of management and labor, dedicate themselves wholeheartedly to a program of expanded employment and expanded production, which will provide job and business opportunities in the readjustment period following the war. It is our responsibility and our duty to remember a sacred obligation and a solemn promise to the men and women of our armed services that suitable employment at decent wages would be available upon their return. The magnitude of this task, gentlemen, is so overwhelming and the challenge is so compelling that every resource and every effort must be made to guarantee cooperation between business and labor and government throughout our city. Successful post-war planning and financial solvency are inseparable. We can expect substantial assistance from the federal and state governments for needed public works. But I suggest we must be prepared to share in the cost. War prosperity has not substantially altered our city's basic financial difficulties. We still have a bond indebtedness of more than $50 million and increasing demands for new community services and facilities which necessitate increased revenue. Therefore, a first step in our post-war planning is the designing of a long-range program that will lead us back to financial solvency. in cooperation with the Board of Estimate and Taxation and the other municipal agencies concerned with the problem of finance, we should undertake a program aimed at achieving the proper legislative action which will alleviate our financial problem. Wolf's earnings tax. We should study the revenue programs of such cities as Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Louisville, programs which have provided solutions to financial conditions similar to ours. At an early date, I would like the privilege of again appearing before your honorable body to present a more detailed account of the tax and financial situation and the possible means of solving it. Minneapolis, as the major city in the state, must enlist the support of its sister cities in attacking this problem. Its solution is dependent upon the equitable distribution of state tax revenues. To achieve this will require not only action by local government, but also the assistance and support of business and labor and the understanding of our critical situation by the representatives of the rural areas. Minneapolis has suffered from the publicity of laxity in law enforcement. This undoubtedly has prejudiced and influenced the rural areas against our city. Any program of goodwill or public relations directed towards gaining the confidence and understanding of the people in other sections of this state must include adequate and proper law enforcement. Yes, adequate and proper law enforcement is an integral part of our overall community program. It must have its proper place, however, within a total program of civic betterment. I recognize that under the terms of our city charter, the mayor has primary responsibility for the maintenance of law and order, but his hands must not be tied by inadequate personnel and facilities. Efficient police administration may necessitate the acquisition of improved and modern facilities, the establishment of a continuing program of in-service police training, and the recruitment of additional police personnel. More than 175 members of our police department are now in the armed services. There are three alternatives in designing a policy for their reemployment. Either they will be absorbed by the department as an addition to the force, or they will be denied reemployment altogether, or they will displace present employees. Now, all scientific surveys of our police department prove that it is undermanned and understaffed. It is therefore my recommendation that a policy be established to guarantee reemployment of police personnel returning from the armed services on the basis of an addition to the force without dismissal of present employees. It is estimated that this policy will ultimately increase the number of police officers by approximately 100 men. The rights of these men must and will be guaranteed, and at the same time, this policy will provide Minneapolis with more adequate police protection. An advisory committee on police administration and law enforcement will become an integral part of my administration. Programs directed towards crime prevention and the curtailment of juvenile delinquency will be expanded. But law enforcement is not merely a matter of police administration. A peaceful and harmonious and law-abiding community comes only when people live in conditions which are conducive to normal and healthy community relations. There is a direct relationship between a high level of employment at decent wages and a respect for law. There is a direct relationship between good housing, adequate parks and playgrounds, progressive schools, modern library facilities, and the respect for the laws and ordinances of this city. It is with this in mind that I recommend to this body and to our other governmental agencies the expansion and development of our libraries, of our parks and playgrounds, the building of new and better housing, and the designing of programs aimed at ensuring a high level of employment. The post-war plans of our park board merit the fullest support on the part of the council and the mayor. The parks, the parkway, and the playground system of Minneapolis is one of the biggest assets of our community. It has made our city famous all over the country while lending character and color, health and happiness to the lives of those who live within its bounds. We cannot be content, however, with the glory of the past. We must expand and improve our recreational facilities within the limits of our financial means.
It is also essential that the need for new and improved health and welfare facilities be considered, and that we cooperate fully with the Board of Public Welfare in its efforts to elevate the standards of public health and welfare. It is my recommendation that this body give serious consideration to the integration and the consolidation of our city and county public health and welfare services and facilities. This would provide a more equitable distribution of costs and, I believe, better administration. In the performance of our public duty, you as members of the City Council and I as mayor must work within the framework provided by the City Charter. We must respect the authority vested in the other governmental boards, each entrusted with specific responsibilities. In the discharge of their responsibilities, these agencies can serve the public efficiently only if their policies are coordinated and integrated. And as a member of the various boards, I shall attempt to provide leadership toward that end. Now, Minneapolis city government has been the subject of debate for many years. Many proposals for charter revision have been recommended, and many groups have urged reform because of a sincere belief that our present structure of government is inadequate. There is no denying that many people sincerely believe our present form of government, with its many boards and commissions, which take away power and responsibility from the council and from the mayor, is inadequate. This places a definite responsibility upon us to demonstrate the adequacy and the efficiency of the present form by carrying into effect the programs that are essential to civic betterment. If we are unable to do this with the existing machinery of government, then I think we ought courageously to face the issue of sound reform. The challenge for efficient government was well stated by our late and beloved president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he stated, and I quote, "The modern democratic statesman realizes now more than ever before that if government is to be able to meet its appointed tasks, it must be more practical, more efficient, and more responsive to human needs. Simple honesty in carrying out the plans and policies is not enough. So far as government is concerned with any social or economic planning, success can be and will be imperiled if we do not put in order our governmental organization for this duty." End of quote. During the period of this war, great strides have been made towards attaining a united community here in Minneapolis. We have heard much about the unity in our city that has made possible our great record of war production. We have pointed with pride to the fact that the men and women of all races and creeds are fighting side by side in the cause of freedom. Yet there are disturbing signs of disunity and intolerance which must command our attention. Government can no longer ignore displays of bigotry, violence, and discrimination. The true test of democratic unity lies in the practical application of democratic ideals on a local basis. Let us not fail to remember that minority persecution, whatever may be that minority, is the first sign of social disintegration. Let us not fail to remember that wherever dictatorship has gained control, its first attack was upon a racial or a religious minority. Let us also remember that where there has been a quick and a decisive application of the instruments of law and order to smash those forces which would let loose their toxin and poison of intolerance, democratic institutions have been strengthened and freedom has been preserved. We must dedicate ourselves to the true ideals of democracy, wherein every person is accepted as a human being with dignity and worth, regardless of race, color, or creed. Government of the people must point the way. We must set the example. I call upon this honorable body to unite with me in the promotion and establishment of a community relations program which will do much to eradicate the symptoms and demonstrations of intolerance and discrimination wherever they may be found. We here in Minneapolis have had a local Fair Employment Practices Committee which has done a splendid job in view of the limitations under which it operates. To say the least, the problem of employment discrimination has been brought out into the open, and efforts through private and public agencies have been made to eliminate it. The steps which have already been taken and the pattern of action which has been established are achievements which cannot and must not be liquidated at the end of the war. It is our duty and our responsibility to do all within our power to guarantee equal opportunities of employment to all persons, regardless of their race, color, or creed. It is our responsibility, regardless of action or inaction on the part of the national or state government, to see to it that fair employment practices are continued here. And I recommend for your consideration the establishment of a local fair employment practices committee on a permanent basis. The pattern of organization has already been established in many other cities. We would do well to follow their lead. The recent municipal elections demonstrated, I believe, a clear desire on the part of the voters to instill new life in their city government. They are looking to us for the formulation and the execution of programs which they believe are necessary for the building of a better city. The success of democratic government demands that it must be responsive to the wishes of the people. If we fail in our duty, it is not only we as individuals who suffer, it is the cause of democracy and the cause of continued expansion of freedom that suffer. This is our challenge. This is our responsibility. And now, as I assume the trust which the people of Minneapolis have committed to me, I appeal to you for your most earnest and thoughtful support. I shall rely upon the wisdom of this body and those who share with me the duties and responsibilities of administration. And above all, I reverently invoke the guidance and the blessings of Almighty God.
H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y spells Humphrey. He's the people's choice to be our mayor, 'cause we the people know that he'll be square. H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y, you see, it's a name to proclaim. The people are on the march again with Humphrey for mayor.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that's the Humphrey for Mayor campaign song. Are you singing it?